Welcome to my Soul Life podcast. This is my playground and I'm your host, Susan Scollin. I believe that we can live a life we love every day. To do this, we have to go on a journey to uncover who we are on every layer. Join me each Monday for conversations about following our soul's calling and embodying what lights us up so we can become even more amazing people. And then later in the week, I'll be back with our Soul Life conversations where we open up and explore who we truly are to become authentically us. Be inspired. A quick reminder for you that all the information shared in this podcast is my experience and the experience of my guest. It's not medical or mental health advice, diagnosis or treatment, and I'd encourage you to seek professional advice where needed. Hi, everyone. Oh my, we're diving deep into a really beautiful and touching story today for Beth and her son, Joey. Beth shares with us early on that she's having a more challenging week, but she's truly amazing and sharing this information so that others can find the support that they need. In this episode, we talk about suicide ideation and suicide attempts. Beth doesn't go into details, but it's something that her son Joey has moved through or is moving through, and you'll hear why in our chat. If this could trigger you in any way, please stop listening and go and get the support that you need. That being said, Beth shares her lessons, her challenges, and you'll hear all about what she and Joey have created because of this journey that they're on, and it's super inspiring. Beth Stuyvesant is an adoptive parent to her 19-year-old son, Joey. She's been walking beside Joey as he struggled with addiction and mental health issues for several years. They created a podcast together to help other families called Unraveling Adoption, and Beth has created a support group for adoptive parents called Aptitude. Beth's eyes were opened about relinquishment trauma after Joey was in crisis, so she's hoping to catch other parents and help them with these issues sooner. This is a beautiful conversation with Beth, all about love, and that connection is key no matter what's happening. Beth talks a lot about how she had to put on her own oxygen mask to be able to support Joey in the way that he needed. And from what I took away from our chat, they have a loving relationship despite everything that's happening. Beth and I would love to hear what you took away from this episode. So head over to my website, susanscollin.com, or Instagram, my.soul.life.podcast, and tell us. And you can reach out to Beth via the show notes for this episode on my website too. See you inside. Well, welcome, Beth. It's great to have you here, and I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. I think there's a lot of people out there that are impacted by what we're going to talk about, and it's going to be just amazing. So I'm really excited.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, I'd love to start by asking my guest, what's one thing that's bringing you the most joy at the moment?
Oh, okay. Well, the thing that's bringing me the most joy is that I'm able to help other parents. It's actually been a pretty painful week this week with my son. So, but the joy is that I don't have to just sit in that pain and being unable to help him, you know, and we'll probably talk about his situation a little bit later, but that I can flip that around and use it to help other parents. And that makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, because we can be going through those darker times or more troubling times, but there's always a positive light. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. And what you're learning through, particularly what perhaps what's going on this week, in, you know, you'll be able to help somebody with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Such a great gift that you're giving to the world.
I hope so.
Some days it doesn't feel like that, does it?
My son and I have talked about, we're like, this better help somebody because this is really hard. So yeah, help somebody out there. It clicks and something resonates with somebody.
Yeah, totally. So do you want to take us on your journey around your son, like everything that came sort of before, why you went down that line and where you are today?
Sure. So I'm an adoptive parent. I adopted my son. We just have one son. He's 19 right now. And we adopted him when he was a baby from Japan. My husband at the time is Japanese American. One of you had to be Japanese to adopt from there. And so we went to Japan, had this wonderful time in Japan for 2 weeks, then brought him back here. And he was a little bit, you know, one of those wild children, you know, woo, just running around and very kind of busy, active. But that was really the only problem when he was a kid. He was pretty delightful, and just being an only child, he got along well with a lot of grown-ups, and he's just, everyone loved Joey, or they still do, but he was just a delightful child. Then adolescence hit, and he kind of, looking back, he was unable to mask anymore. Adoptees a lot of times will mask and try to be as good as possible because they don't want to get given away again. So a lot of adoptees, they kind of go either one way or the other, like really good, well-behaved, and like trying to please everyone, or just screw it, I'm just, you know, going to wreak havoc. But my son was more on the first side. But then adolescence struck, and he got into substances, nicotine, and then cannabis, and then psychedelics, which I always want to let parents know, did you know that you could vape psychedelics? You can vape psychedelics, you guys. So, and it's a specific kind that you can vape that's extremely strong. It's called DMT. It's like, I don't know, 10 times stronger than LSD, and it's very short acting. So it's up and down in 20 minutes instead of many hours. And kids are using it in their vape pens. So vape pens are not just for nicotine. But anyway, all of that created a mental health crisis, trigger warning. I'm going to be talking about suicidality a bit, but obviously my son is still alive, so it didn't, he didn't complete it, but he attempted suicide. He's attempted many times, but it happened. The first time I knew about it was when he was 15, and oddly enough, 4 years ago tomorrow when we're recording this. Wow. So my heart's a little heavy probably this week because of that. Yeah. So yeah, I didn't realize he had been using substances. The first I knew was he was in the psych hospital after trying to kill himself. Then I got word from the doctor after they did the blood test that, did you know there was a ton of substances in your kid's system? He had LSD and cannabis, and I don't know, there must've been something else that's kind of foggy right now, but I was like, what, what? I was already still reeling that he tried to kill himself, and then add on top of that, that he'd been using substances. And it turns out my ex-husband had been buying him cannabis. He was his drug supplier. He'd been buying him cannabis because he said, oh, Dad, I need help sleeping, which the kids will make up all sorts of things to tell you they need things. And you just say no, but his dad didn't. He said, okay, all right, I'll get you some. And so he had been helping him get weed for, I don't know, we think maybe a year or something like that, but no one ever told us, my wife and I. So I remarried. And anyway, so we were really in the dark. So then that was tough. He was in the psych hospital for about 2 weeks. And then he's been in and out of many psych hospitals since then. It's been 4 years. The first year after that happened, I just went bananas. I was just running after him, trying to fix him, finding this doctor, that doctor, this alternative health medicine, that alternative modality, blah. I was just a mess. I was just trying to save him desperately. And it all came out of love and wanting my son not to die. But it turned out it was not the best tactic to use. And it ended up driving him further away from me. So then I got a life coach, and she helped me really look at myself, and that whole piece of it is really important. And at the same time, an adoptee friend of mine, and kind of an acquaintance, really, I didn't know her well, but she said, Beth, isn't your son adopted? You might want to look into that. That might be causing some of these problems, not causing, but be the root cause, the root pain that he's needing to numb out for. I'm like, really? I had never thought of that. Like, I don't know why. I was just so ignorant. So that's why I'm out speaking as much as I can. So other adoptive parents and just community people, if more people are aware of adoption trauma, relinquishment trauma, and they might, you know, wake up a little bit sooner than I did. So once I figured that out, I went to an adoption therapist that this woman recommended, and I read a book called The Primal Wound by Nancy Verrier, which is considered to be the adoptee Bible. It's She's actually an adoptive parent, social worker who wrote this book and was the first to really write it down how much adoption affects people through their whole lives. So it was a big awakening. It was very painful to realize that me adopting him was part of his major pain. And also it was the relinquishment by his birth mother. And, you know, it was a lot of things, but if I hadn't adopted and been in this whole system, you know, he wouldn't have this pain. So it was a lot of guilt and, oh my gosh, I should have known. But I have been working through some of that. I won't say it's totally gone, but working through some of that. And now we're on close to the other side. We're still kind of mired in the addiction piece of it, but my son understands the adoption trauma. He's worked through some of it and is aware of it, which is more than many, many grown-up adults, adoptees don't understand yet. So yes. I'm super proud of him for really looking at it. It's pain. If it was that painful for me to realize, imagine how painful it is for an adoptee to go, oh my gosh, I feel so worthless because I have felt worthless since before I was born. You know, and that deep, deep wound, the primal wound that is pre-consciousness, like in utero pain, emotional pain. And it's hard to even grasp, but it is so deep that my son continues to try to self-destruct. Yeah. And it's really, really hard for everybody. It's really hard for everyone to deal with.
Yeah. But you're both still here, which is amazing. And you're still working together. And like you said, you've got the awareness of it now and you can continue to work together as much as that a teenager, a 19-year-old would let you.
Yes. But, yes. Every time he calls, I'm grateful because after a kid's 18, they never have to talk to you again, right? They have no reason to talk to you unless they want to. So anyone with adult children, their children are talking to you, something's going right because they don't have to.
That's so true.
He does rely on me quite a bit because my life coach helped me change our relationship. I wonder if you've heard of something called the CRAFT method.
Oh,
it's in addiction.
It's in addiction. Yes.
It's called community reinforcement and family training. Yeah. And it's a different way of looking at addiction. It's kind of, you know, you've got the Al-Anon type way and Al-Anon helps a lot of people. So if that works for you, great. But Al-Anon is kind of that tough love approach where you kind of shut the door and let me know when you're sober because I cannot deal with you right now. It's kind of opposite of that. It's staying in positive connection with your child or loved one, no matter what, with strong boundaries. So the CRAFT method is amazing and it really helped turn my whole relationship with my son around. So now I'm the first one he calls when he's feeling suicidal, when he's feeling cravings, when he's struggling with knowing what to do. He calls me first, which is what I would really prefer rather than him calling his addicted friends or, you know, his dad or, you know, I want him coming toward me. So that's the whole purpose of CRAFT is to make your kids and your loved one, whoever's struggling with addiction, to come toward you and to keep in connection with them.
Yeah. And I understand with CRAFT, it's around loving your child or loving that person. No matter what's going on. So even with the addiction, even with the suicide challenges, I still love you. That's just the cornerstone to all of it.
Yeah. And what I've been realizing these last several months, because he's been in and out of recovery a dozen times in the last couple of months, which I feel like is kind of promising because he keeps trying, like doing more research. Okay, is there a reason I don't do that anymore? Oh, yeah. Now I remember why I don't do that anymore. And then he comes back. So back and forth and back and forth. So I feel like it's a positive thing because he's working it out. But I've realized that I ideally don't treat him any differently, whether he's using substances or not, whether he's in rehab or if he's at his dad's and I know he's using weed again. I behave to him the same, no matter what, which is not what the culture teaches us typically. This is not the way things usually go. And it is definitely a mind shift and a discipline on my part to just, you know, when I find out that he's using again and it breaks my heart to just continue unconditional positive regard. I am so proud of you for calling me. Thank you for calling me and staying in touch with me. I really appreciate that. And I am proud of you for admitting that you have cravings. I mean, that's huge, to admit that you have cravings, to be aware that you have cravings. So there's always something you can find that is positive about a person's behavior, even if they're in the ditch with their addiction. You say, well, you woke up today, you know, you woke up and you called your sponsor, or you know, there's always something that you can say that they're doing right.
Yeah.
And the more things that you can say that they're doing right and truly act like you're proud of your child or your loved one, that will draw them toward you and toward recovery instead of pushing away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what we all want, is that connection. We don't want to feel disconnected to our children, because that doesn't feel particularly good.
Oh.
And it disconnects us from ourselves as well.
Absolutely. All of it. And the shame is a huge piece for both of us. But if you add shame to your loved one that's struggling with addiction, well, shame is probably one of the main reasons why they're using substances. So if you add shame on, that is not going to help. That's going to make things worse. So if you can keep shaming out of the picture as much as possible,
yeah,
that's ideal.
And what are some, so you shared with us some of the, like, things that you say to Joey, and just say, you know, thank you for contacting me. Thank you for showing, you know, that you have, you're using again, that sort of stuff. And what are the thoughts that sit underneath that for you?
Well, for me, now that he's 19, I have to stay out of advice giving and shooting him to death. Have you called so-and-so yet? You know, all of that naggy kind of stuff, I'm really working on stopping doing. So it's giving him positive regard and also giving him space to figure out his path.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of years ago when he was a minor, things, you know, I probably needed to lead him and say, we're going to the therapist right now. But now he's 19 and literally he can do whatever he wants and I have zero control over him. So it is letting him go, letting him choose his path, kind of laying out this smorgasbord of lovely, lovely resources. Choose from.
Yeah.
And it's up to him. So letting go of the outcome, letting him figure out his path.
Yeah.
My big challenge right now.
Yeah. And
because you just want to say, what's wrong with you? Just go to A or go to call somebody. You know, why aren't you doing this or that? You know, so it would be super easy to go that route. Believe me.
Of course. Because then it's like, just, you know, just eat the apple versus eat the packet of chips. You know,
yeah.
It's the same, similar sort of thing, different level, of course, but it's, and different emotions that are coming up, but it's how can I, like, I've got this here, just go and do it. But we do need to let everybody, even our children, go on, like, we need to be let go on our own journey as well.
Yeah, even little children with things that aren't quite so yes. Life or death, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like with the food. Yeah. You lay out foods and then they get to pick what they eat, that you can't force things down their throat.
Yeah.
Literally or figuratively.
Yeah. And are you familiar with motivational interviewing?
And yes.
Yeah. So in terms of what they talk about is the fact that, especially with addiction, because that's where it came out of, is that whole, even though they're going in and out, or people are going in and out of addiction, and you can do this in any area of your life, but you're going in and out of, you're going into rehab and then you come back and you're okay for a period of time and then everything blows up again and then you're back in. They talk about that as actually being healthy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a good sign that they kind of bob up for air and then they go back under, but then they bob up for air and it's getting less and less time each time. I'm noticing the times of use are less. And just last night I talked to him. I said, okay, you know, it's your choice how you want to manage your recovery and whatever, but just, can we have a little conversation about harm reduction? And I'm sure you know about harm reduction, but in case your listeners don't, it's a concept of kind of like seatbelts in your car. You know, you don't get in the car expecting it to have an accident, but you just put your seatbelt on. Now it's habit for everyone. You just put your seatbelt on. So for people using substances, harm reduction is, like for my son, he uses a lot of cannabis and he uses the the oils and the dabbing and the tinctures that are extremely concentrated, like 90% THC, and where a joint is like 20 something percent THC. So it's not what we parents might have used when we were kids. It's something completely different. But we talked about how much he can ingest without going into psychosis, because he's gone into psychosis probably a dozen times, and terrifying. It's really terrifying for all involved because he's completely out of control. He's out of his mind, and it can stick.
Yeah.
It is called cannabis induced psychosis, and it can stay, and you can live like that forever if, and you just never know when, which time it's going to be. So he's figured out what is the amount that he can use at a time that will not put him into psychosis, because he really does not want to do that again either. So he's made kind of a line in the sand for himself.
Yeah, yeah.
So I reminded him of that, and I said, Joy, I just want you to stay safe. So I want you to be able to get to the other side of this, you know, one piece. So whatever you need to do to stay safe.
Yeah. And you mentioned relinquishing trauma. Can you just describe that a little bit more? And you talked about for Joey, it actually happened in utero. So was his mother planning to give him up for adoption before she had him?
I'm not really sure. In Joey's case, his birth mother was very young, and she, according to the papers we got, which are sort of cryptic, but according to what we know, she did not know she was pregnant or didn't admit she was pregnant. Not sure which. I've heard of people not knowing they were pregnant. I can't really understand that. But I've heard that that can happen, but she was young and probably full of shame for getting pregnant. Right. And so I am sure she was in incredible turmoil if she knew she was pregnant and knew that this was coming and she hasn't told anybody yet. So she told, you know, her parents found out in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. So if you can just, I just put myself in her shoes and go, oh my gosh. And in Japan, their culture is so much more conservative than ours in the US is. And, you know, if I think of like 1950s US getting pregnant out of wedlock when you're a teenager and oof. And so all of those stress hormones and cortisol and all that is going into him. That's his, you know, that's his stew he's being cooked in.
Yeah.
And really anybody that relinquishes as when their child is an infant, they're thinking about it in utero, you know, while they're pregnant. It's different if it's a foster situation and your child is forced out of your home. But when you relinquish, it's usually when they're an infant or very soon after. So those early, you know, before you're even born, somatic memories are just so intense, and you can't get to them with therapy, like regular old talk therapy. There's no words. You have no words when you're a baby.
Yeah.
And so my son, you know, sometimes people have trauma like a abuse or a car accident or a something, but usually there's something that was before that. They have something they remember of themselves before that, or they can see pictures of them before the accident or whatever. My son doesn't have that. There was no before.
Yes. Yeah. So he's only known that shame and that relinquishment, like that pain of being let go of. That's
and unwanted, like deeply unwanted. So, you know, sometimes kids have these, oh, nobody loves me. Well, for him, it is like, seriously, no one loves me. The one person that I relied on to love me and take care of me, she couldn't.
Yeah.
And it's not her fault. I don't blame her either. It's the culture. It's a huge, big issue. But, you know, I can hardly blame him for feeling unloved. I mean, that's his first message he got.
Yeah.
That's so tough. It makes me feel so sad for him and for his birth mother, too. I just feel so sad for her. And just, I don't have any idea what her life has been like. It's been very closed adoption, but it's just very, very painful. And I, you know, for 15 years, I thought, oh, isn't adoption great? We helped this kid out and made our family. And it's so lovely. We're just such a great family. And now thinking about adoption in a different light and kind of this big industry, you know, it's in the US, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, adoption. Yeah. And just this machine that these kids are just in, and they have no choice in it, and it's extremely painful.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, it is a big machine, and there is benefits, obviously, for yeah. birth parents, birth mums who cannot care for or are not in a position to care for their child. Then they go off to loving families, generally speaking.
Yeah,
Yep. And then hopefully they're living an amazing life. And for some people they are, like, it's the best thing that could ever happen. And for some people it's a real struggle. So it's just so multifaceted, multi-leveled in terms of the challenges that are within that system.
Oh, yeah. And I think even in the most ideal situation, pretend the child was going to be poverty stricken and like in a war zone. I don't know. Think of the worst possible thing. And pretend they got adopted into this family that held all the resources they need, everything they need. That child will still, I don't care how good the adoptive parents are, they will still have relinquishment trauma because they got separated from their mother. Even if it was for the best reasons, even if the outcome was so much better than what they would have had, that child needs their mother. And it's tough to think about that as an adoptive parent. I mean, that's like, ooh, that's kind of uncomfortable. Because I thought I did a good job. I thought, I love this child so much. But love is not enough. And I know that adoption is necessary in many cases, and adoption will not go away. So what I'm advocating for is, if it absolutely has to happen, that all involved need to have therapy and education much more than I got. Like, I got like zero internationally, but I think some adoptive parents that adopt domestically get better training than I did. Yep. But it needs to be much more. And I think adoptees get to have free therapy for life, and birth parents too. They struggle and struggle. Birth parents, they're told, oh, just don't worry about it. It's water under the bridge. Go have your life. Yeah. You're fine. And they have relinquishment trauma too, just on the other end of things. So I think there just needs to be much more care given to this wound. It's not, you can't just pick up a child and plop it somewhere else and everything's going to be fine. It's just not, it doesn't work like that.
No, and it's been proven through history, especially Australia has a pretty bad history around Indigenous children who were stolen. The stolen generation, and they were placed in Anglo-Saxon homes and, lost so much, because it's not just about, the resources, it's the heritage, it's who you are as a person. You lose those stories.
Like, who you are, that's a deep, deep thing. That is your lineage. And the US and Canada have done similar horrible, horrible things to our Indigenous populations, and it's something that we are going to have to reckon with, for sure. We are reckoning with it, but it's terrible. But I look what I did. I adopted a child from Japan. Yeah. And I did it with the best of intentions, but I took him away from his language, his lineage, his country of birth, all the tastes and smells and culture that is him, that is inside of him. It is biology. And his dad is Japanese American, so he kind of looks like him. But he doesn't really do anything culturally that's Japanese. He doesn't even use chopsticks. And I didn't do a good job of making sure he was in community with Japanese people. So, I feel like inter-country adoption is particularly fraught and adds many more layers on top of the relinquishment trauma, because you're, taking someone across the world and removing them from so many things.
Yeah. So what would you see as an ideal situation? What would that look like? Is it that the child is never adopted, like ideally that it stays within the family environment as best as it could? Or is it that, yes, the child's adopted, but then there's these other aspects that we need to look at?
That's a very good question. I think every adopted person and everyone involved would have a different answer. For me, I consider myself a family preservationist at this point. So if at all possible to keep that child with the birth parents or parent, one of them, if at all possible, if there's not abuse or completely horrible situation. But if there is addiction or mental health issues, is there something the community can do to wrap around that family, provide rehab, provide mental health counseling, you know, pour it on to that family instead of pouring it into the money that's spent on fostering and adopting people. I would like to see that happen. Now, okay, so say that literally it's not safe for a child to be with his birth parents. Then you try to find family members of any sort. Kinship adoption is great because then you're not losing the lineage, you're not losing the language. Hopefully geography stays pretty close. If there's no family, then get as close as you can, you know, demographically and geographically, and don't rip the kid halfway around the world, and just keep them as close as possible and in an open adoption so the child is not cut off from, you know, communication later on from their birth family.
Yeah.
Even if the birth parents are struggling, that child, that's their parents.
Yeah.
That's their parents. So as long as, you know, done in a safe way, of course. And so that's what I think should happen. There are people that believe adoption is horrible and should never, ever, ever be used. I don't go that far, but I really think that we should take the resources we spend on adoption and pour those into the birth families and see if that can help reduce trauma all around.
Yeah. So we can support each other and help each other grow effectively. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because if it really is about the children, if it's really about the children, we'll do what we can to keep that child with this birth mother. And if it's really about creating families for infertile couples, like it was for me, then that's not a good reason.
Yeah.
That's not a good
reason. Yeah. Sorry. So that was, so you just gave us the reason why adoption was an option for you guys. Mm-hmm. Was there any other pieces within that? Like, did you feel something was missing from your life? What else came into your space?
I just wanted a child. I was in my late 30s. We went through several rounds of infertility treatment and I was practically suicidal every time it didn't work. And I was like, I can't do that anymore. But I still wanted a child. So it was to fill my need. And, you know, it feels good to help another child. It, you know, there's that element where... But really, I wanted to make a family.
Yeah.
And so that adoptive parents, we need to really look at that. And I did not deal with my infertility before I went into this. That's the other thing. If infertility is in the picture, birth or adoptive parents, you got to deal with that first before you even think about adopting. Because I didn't. I just sort of said that aside. Said okay. I'm not doing that anymore. Let's go on to this other thing. And then it happened really fast. We got him within like 4 months. And now I don't have any time to think about infertility because I have a baby now. So,
yeah. So is it the healing of the infertility and the fact that you can't get pregnant and then you've gone through all this IVF, I'm assuming, process and the trauma of that bucket effectively needs to heal.
A lot of grief that needs to heal, a lot of kind of shame, and just the loss. You know, I don't have a child that looks like me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a child that has any of my characteristics. You know, it's not nearly the loss that my child ended up having because of his separation, but there's a lot of grief that I'm dealing with it now, and it's not easy. But that can't hang over your child's head.
No.
You know, your adopted child cannot fill that hole that your infertility created. Yeah. So those are separate things. So if any adoptive parents, and I know when I was in that situation, I probably would have just said, oh, I'm not listening to you. I will be fine.
Yes.
But I would say, take it slow and figure out this piece first before jumping into looking into adoption. But yeah. I know when your clock is ticking and you just want a baby, it's like no stopping you.
Yeah, yeah, just keep going. It's like a train, a freight train kind of thing. Yeah. But it's a reflection of life where we push and push and push and keep going. And you're like, can we just slow down, even if it's just for a day? Like everybody has a day just to slow down. It's not going to change whether you have a baby or not have a baby at that point in time.
Right. Yes. I wish I would have thought of that back then. I didn't even think.
But that's okay. You're thinking about it now. And you're giving other people the opportunity to think about it too.
To help other people think better. Yeah. I do. I give myself grace. You know, I didn't know. I didn't know. Yeah. No one was telling me. Certainly the infertility community wasn't telling me. They wouldn't say, you might want to get some help around this. They're like, come have another treatment, please. That's another money-making venture, right? They're all about, just try it again. It's okay. You can do it. Yes. So, you know, there's a lot of money controlling what we as adoptive parents hear.
Mm. No, so my son was born through IVF and, you just touched on something that happened for us in terms of we had a miscarriage the first time around 6 weeks and then we didn't get particularly great support. I would say we got terrible support, but anyway, through our specialist at the time, and then get a phone call, you know, 2 days later after the miscarriage to say, let's book you in for a follow up. And I'm like, what are you following up? You know, it's done and dusted. What are you following up? So I wasn't going back there again. So.
Oh, that's so insensitive and just short-sighted. You know, these are humans and you, a human, and the other human that you're trying to create. It's not a game or Monopoly that we're playing here. These are human souls that are on the line here. And that's, makes me sort of angry.
Yes. It's a whole other conversation we could have, isn't it?
But we have to, as consumers of this, you know, we need to keep in mind that they're not on our side.
Yeah.
Anyone we're paying is not on our side. They're wanting the money, right? You've got to just be very careful.
Yeah.
Wary.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's
I'm sure there are some good
people
that are putting money on it, but just know that it's a transaction.
Yes.
And what are they getting out of it? What are you getting out of it? Make sure that it all aligns.
Yes. And make sure you're working with people that align with you as opposed to just ticking a box kind of thing, just to get to the outcome. And it may work for some people. It just didn't work for me, you know, that kind of thing. So just, but you learn. You learn quickly.
Sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Just these things happen. So, Anyway, separate story, but come back to the adoption and your, you know, with Joey, and not necessarily the adoption, but your lessons with Joey. What have you learned over this time?
Oh, boy. Well, his crisis had prompted me, kind of forced me to have my own blossoming of my own personal growth. Because I was, before he was 15 and landed in the psych hospital. Before that, we were just kind of, you know, on the top edge of life, just kind of getting through, you know, running him here and there, being baseball parents and, you know, doing the life that you see everybody doing, but we weren't deep into anything. And his crisis has forced us all, my wife and I, his dad, who has not really done that much work, but I'm sure it's made him think, and himself, to really evaluate what is going on, what is important, what do I need to do, who am I, you know, all this identity stuff that my son's dealing with, I'm dealing with it too. I'm dealing with my own attachment issues. And I think whatever your children are going through, it triggers whatever's left over that you haven't dealt with in that particular situation. Yeah. Hello, now you're going to deal with it because it's right in front of your face. And especially adolescents, they just bring up all sorts of stuff that from your own adolescence. So I'm working on my own healing from my own intergenerational trauma, different from Joey's, obviously, because I'm not adopted, but you know, I'm working on my own and working on letting go of control because I'm kind of a control freak. I'm a workaholic. That's how I handled my own trauma that I had when I was younger. And I just like, I guess I'm doing everything myself. So I cling tightly to control. And boy, Joey's teaching me how little I have control over of another person, you know?
Yeah.
Virtually none.
Yeah.
Virtually none. But I can control myself. And I have control over my choices. So that's probably been the biggest thing I've had to learn.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, letting him go on his journey and just loving him where he's at. Which means you can let yourself go on your journey and love yourself where you're at.
Yeah.
And the only thing we can control are our thoughts, really, about all of that.
Yes, and we get to decide what story we're telling ourselves about our journey and our loved ones' journeys. And you know, some stories you tell yourselves are helpful, more helpful than others.
Yeah.
So just constantly tweaking it and trying to be the healthiest I can be for myself. And the more healthy I am, the easier it is for us to have a good relationship.
Yeah.
So it trickles down.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a flow-on effect. It does flow out. Yeah.
And he says, yeah, you're a grown up, you're 54 years old and you're still working on yourself. I guess it's all right if I'm 19 and working on myself. I guess this is what humans do. So it makes it real. Yeah. None of us know what we're doing, really. We're just sort of just keeping on going and working to get better every day.
Yeah. And I believe that we have these opportunities to grow and learn and evolve for our higher self, even as crappy as they are. And you kind of go, can't I just have the really lovely life where everything's easy? But everything is kind of 50-50, like there is good and there is bad, and it's almost like heaven and hell. Do you know what I mean? Like it's right here. And it's how we evolve through that and what we learn and what we open up to or give ourselves permission to open up to. And the resistance or the pain only comes when we do resist. So
yes. And then what you resist persists. So then you get stuck in a cycle like that. Oh boy. I have often joked that I don't know if I believe in reincarnation or not. I don't know. I kind of like that movie Soul. Remember that Pixar movie Soul? I kind of figure it like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a really interesting movie, but I figure, you know, I must have had control issues in my past, and I can picture myself coming back to Earth a couple of times. Okay, I guess you didn't learn that lesson yet. I'm going to give you a really hard one this time. Maybe you'll learn it this time. So I feel like I'm in the advanced course of letting go of control.
It's funny. I've been talking about it from a, like, that's a beautiful perspective. Like you've hit it over lifetimes potentially. And now we're going to really hit it with lots of emotion as well. Like not just control of, you know, your environment. It's actually an emotional thing. So really deep levels. But it's like when you graduate into the next life, it'll be like, this is all going to help into the evolution of who you become potentially in your next life, if you choose, you know, however you believe in all of that sort of stuff.
That's kind of what I feel like. Okay, I'm working on this. And then, you know, next time around, maybe that control piece will be fixed. And then there will be more, because if we choose to come to our human experience, it's imperfect and we're sort of a mess down here, right? Yeah. So, but there's a, I don't know why, but there's a reason we come into human form and live in this imperfect world. So that's all that makes me feel like all this work that we're doing on this earth, I feel like that gives it a sense of purpose and a sense of, okay, this will help me going forward and it will help others too on the journey.
Yeah. So what would you want to say to your earlier self, like that version of yourself that's in the midst of the, you know, relinquishment trauma with Joey and his addictions and the challenges? What would you want to say to her?
Yeah, that first year, oh man, I would have said, put your own oxygen mask on first and take care of yourself. Yeah. You know, it looks like your son's going to fall apart without you, but I tried to help him for a whole year and he still fell apart. So he's going to do what he's going to do at that point. Even at 15, you can't pick them up and put them where you want them to be. You can't force people to do things. So to just take care of myself, because in that first year of crisis, I lost myself. I was nowhere to be found. I'm like, people would say, how are you? I mean, like, Joey is blank, 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 blank. And they'd be like, no, how are you? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I have no idea. So I kind of just gave up on myself and just focused everything on him. And that was not healthy for either of us. And it didn't help. It didn't help him at all. So that's what I would tell myself, is just, it's horrible and it sucks and he's in pain. And you, Beth, need to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And it goes against every mothering instinct you have.
Yes. And it's against every story that society tells you as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but that's when things flipped around for us, is when I started doing that. And I'm so grateful for my life coach. Her name's Heather Ross. She helped me so much. And then I found all sorts of other resources that have helped me along the way. I've kind of created a whole encyclopedia of things that have helped me. I take a little of this, a little of that, and I've built a life that's a lot easier. Still hard, but it's a lot easier. Yeah. And I'm very present for it. I am within my own body now and in my own, deeply in touch with my own emotions now, for better or for worse.
We're together forever.
Yes.
Yeah. And what would you say to the parents that are struggling with this at the moment, struggling with the version of what you've been through?
Yeah, with either adoption or addiction, it's all really the same story, is to focus on yourself and keep the positive connection with your child. The opposite of addiction is connection, not sobriety, but connection. So staying connected. And the same with adopted children, to stay connected. That's what they're craving. They have attachment issues, right? So they're craving connection. So whatever you can do to stay connected within yourself and then with your loved one, be the most important thing.
Beautiful. Well, you've shared heaps of information. Before we get into the wrap-up questions, is there anything that you'd like to sort of share? Anything we haven't touched on?
I just want to let everyone know, if they are an adoptive parent or if they know an adoptive parent, I do have a group for adoptive parents. It's free. It's called Aptitude, a support group for adoptive parents facing adoption's challenges. So this is not the kind of group where we all celebrate adoption and go, "Wee, isn't this fun?" This is for the people in the trenches like me that, you know, things are sort of falling apart, or you're concerned. Maybe you're catching this earlier than I did and want to prevent some of this stuff from happening. So it's a group, and we just share resources, and we have a monthly speaker forum where we have a book we're reading together, and a private Facebook group. So if any adoptive parents want to hop on in, you can find information at our website, unravelingadoption.com/aptitude.
Yeah, fabulous. It sounds like a really supportive space, and a space about growth, not like personal growth, that then supports, you know, your adoptive child or children. Yeah.
It's honestly a little bit of a tough sell, because it's like, hey, you want to come look at trauma and work on yourself? People would much rather work on their kids. But yeah. This is a place to work on ourselves and to help our kids, but through getting ourselves healthier.
Yeah. So just to add some value, hopefully, to this, not that I've been in your group or anything, but I'm a bonus mum, and there was some struggles earlier. And, you know, children and bonus children are the fast track to personal development. So I had a good insight into that. But I went onto some social media sites just to look for support, but they were free groups, and they were all, what I saw was they were bagging out the children, and I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that person. So you put that into an adoptive space or a addiction space, you know, the toxicity is out there, but there is also the beauty out there, and it's harder to find that beauty, and you're giving us that today.
Yeah, it's super easy to blame other people, blame the birth families. They get blamed a lot. They get thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
Blame your kid for being an addict, all this judging language. But yeah, let's put the spotlight on ourselves, and that will help our children
in
the long run.
Yeah. And I've had Heather on the podcast, so she introduced us to craft as well.
That's how I know you.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, Heather's amazing.
Yes, and her story is amazing and so heart-wrenching, but what she was able to create with her daughter is phenomenal, and anybody can do that.
She inspires me every day, because spoiler alert, if you haven't heard Heather's episode with Susan, go listen to that now. Press pause, go listen to that. But Heather's daughter, who had struggled with addiction for years, ended up dying of a fentanyl overdose by accident. But Heather's taught me that every single time I talk to my son, he needs to feel that positive regard. I want my last words to say to him, if he, God forbid, you know, gets into fentanyl poisoning or something, psychosis, whatever, I don't want to live with, you know, scolding him or shaming him. So every time I say goodbye to him, I'm proud of you. I love you. Keep going. Every single time.
Yeah.
Because we just never know. And no one ever really knows, you know, when is going to be somebody's last day, but it's so important when our kids are struggling like that to just stay connected with them.
Absolutely. And it's a connection we can do every single day, regardless of struggle. Mm-hmm. It can just be when you're putting your kid to bed, it's just saying, I'm proud of you. I love you. You're amazing. And yeah.
It's very good for everybody.
Well, and it's good for us too, because it reflects back to us.
Yeah, definitely.
All those win-wins. Mm. Well, thank you so much. So I love to ask, self-love has been a cornerstone to my journey. So what's one thing that you do for self-love?
My favorite technique for self-love is something I started after I met Heather. I was trying to connect with my son's heritage, being Japanese, and I started taiko drumming, you know, with the big arms and you're flailing about and it's very athletic and kind of dance-like. And it is amazing. It is great exercise. And I kind of, if I'm angry, I imagine somebody's face inside the drum, just like whack, whack, whack. You know, and I work out my anger and my frustration, my anxiety, and the sound penetrates and it feels like a jackhammer just breaking everything up inside of me. So my drumming, I go every week. It's 45 minutes away, but I go every single week, rain or shine, because I have to. It's so healing for me. I love it. And it's fun.
Which is even better for healing.
Fun and healing. Drumming is awesome.
Yeah. Sound healing is so, they say it's the purest form of healing, because if you're religious, it's an easy way to sort of share this, is that God spoke the words around building of earth and the 7 days and all that sort of stuff that it took, but he spoke it. So that's what they say is one of the reasons that sound healing is from, that's a religious perspective. You come back to any kind of perspective you want, but that's why sound healing is so transformative for us and takes us to our core.
There's been many times we start our warm up, just a silly warm up, bah, 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 and I start crying immediately.
Yeah.
Like it touches somewhere I can't get to with my brain. It touches deeply. So yeah, drumming, music, sound healing, singing bowls, all that stuff is so good.
Yeah. Your son brought that into your life. That's pretty cool.
Yes, he did. Yeah. I wanted him to do it with me, but then it turned into a thing that moms do. So now he doesn't think it's cool, but maybe someday.
Maybe someday. You never know. Never know. So, and also you've provided so much amazing information on the podcast today. So if myself and the listeners were to take one thing away, implement it in our own life in service of you, what would that be?
I would say that as parents, the best thing we can do for our kids is to go work on ourselves, go get therapy, find the things that bring you joy, work on ourselves first, which will feel selfish. But I think that's the most important thing that I've figured out to do. And that's what I tell people.
Yeah.
Go get your own therapy first.
One of my clients has an amazing line. He just says, I grow, we grow. So if you go and work on yourself, then everybody else gets to grow around you as well.
Yes.
It's beautiful. So where can people find you and tell us specifically what you're doing, what work you're doing in the world?
Well, I have a podcast called Unraveling Adoption. My son and I actually made it. And then he dropped off when he went back into substances, but he is very much on board. By the way, I should have told you a long time ago, he very much wants our story to be out there. He's given me explicit permission and I check on him every couple of weeks. Are you still okay with me sharing all this? And he still is. So don't worry anybody. He knows I'm blabbing all this out to the public. Yeah. He wants it out there. He's like, Mom, this has to help somebody. So it's good. Unraveling Adoption. It's on all the podcast apps and on YouTube as well. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. And our website is unravelingadoption.com.
Fantastic. And if someone comes in to work with you, what does that look like?
For right now, it's just the adoptive parents group.
Yep.
And resources, we share resources, provide a place for people to share and learn together. I am getting my coaching certificate hopefully by summer. So summer of 2023, I will be a family coach.
That's exciting. Which is about June for you guys, isn't it? So that's...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. June, summer in the U.S. Yes, more than ever in the summer. Yes. So yeah, around June, July. Yeah. So then I'll be able to have, I'll create groups and individual family sessions.
Yeah. Oh, that's fabulous. So at the moment it's community basis, connecting with each other and just creating that support for each other as well.
Yeah. And I love sending people resources, like sending them to Heather, finding, here's a perfect book for what you're looking for. I know lots of resources. So if anyone's looking for resources for addiction or adoption, I'd be happy to help.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Beth. This has been incredible. As I said at the beginning, I was excited to have this conversation. Such a unique story, but such a deep and gorgeous story. And you and Joey are going to grow and evolve and, you know, become whatever you need to become. But it's beautiful, and the work that you're doing in the world as well to support other parents. It's incredible. Thank you, Susan.
And you're doing great work too with your podcast. I've listened to many episodes and I love it. And I really feel a kindred spirit with you. So keep going.
Me too. Thank you. I will.
Thank you for joining me today. And I have a couple of small favors to ask. If you love this episode, please share it with someone you love and you know the episode will resonate with. Also, to help spread the word about my podcast, please head over to iTunes and leave me a review. I love hearing your thoughts about my podcast and what's resonating with you. Plus, it helps us share my podcast with the rest of the world, which is amazing. Finally, thank you so much for being here. I'm super grateful for you and I'm truly honored you've spent your time with me. Let's keep rising, let's keep growing, because it's totally possible to live a life you love every day, right where you are. See you in the next episode.